Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty. It's my brother Brian's birthday today, and he's running away from me. Turns the big 5-0. I think he's a little nervous about being on the radio. I'm not sure if he's going to get a little feedback about that or not. So he is not in the studio today, but he may call in here in a little bit. We got a lot to talk about today. There's quite a bit of stuff going on out in the fields. We're going to be talking about one nutrient in particular today, boron, and what a difference that can make on your farm. We're going to be talking about another one of the leachable nutrients coming up tomorrow. I believe we're going to talk about sulfur a little bit too. So it's interesting. You know, we've got a number of different projects going on our farm, whether it's dry land farming, which is our whole farm, or some of the irrigation stuff that we're working on just on a small scale at the Ag PhD Field Day site. And a lot of you that came to the Ag PhD Field Day this year or even last year, you get to see some of that work being done as well. But we've got an overhead lateral system set up. We've got subsurface irrigation through drip tape, subsurface irrigation through tile lines specifically set up for the purpose of irrigating. And just comparing that to what we're doing in a dry land situation. And some of these nutrients have been really fun to work with and try to learn some differences, one of them being boron. And boron being a nutrient that we can actually push into the plant. We were just looking at some of our satellite imagery through our Farmer's Edge subscription, what we've got going on in fields with boron applications, foliar versus other micros that we put out there. I think it was pretty interesting, Brian.
Yeah, it was interesting. It's just we did probably 5-6 things, and so it's hard to know which one of those things really paid the most. Was it the fungicide? Was it the insecticide, for that matter? I mean, this year we had all kinds of corn leaf aphids. I don't know for sure, but all I know is there is certainly a difference, and that's one of the reasons why it's kind of helpful seeing that. You know, when you've got the satellite imagery, you can tell right away, I mean, like right to the line, and boy, that's really helpful. It's nice seeing the yield at the end of the year also, obviously. We have to have that, and we certainly hope that turns out, but I'm already feeling pretty good about what we did here a month ago.
You know, when you think about boron on our farm, we've been historically short. It seems like every year our boron levels kind of bounce around a little bit, but for the most part are in that deficient category. Last year, we finally broke through. We put on enough boron that we made a difference, but that's not safe for everybody else to do because we get feedback all the time. Man, you said you're using this much boron, but for guys in super light soils, for guys with low calcium levels in their soil, it may not be the safest thing to do. But keeping in mind that we've got heavy soils, low rainfall, and high calcium levels, you want to talk about what our strategy is with the boron?
Well, first of all, when you're talking about this foliar boron stuff, but keep in mind the foliar boron, when we had that compared to a blended micronutrient package and a little bit more for foliar fertilizer, the blended stuff was much greener than where we threw the boron in. I would have expected that. We need more than just boron in the crop, obviously. But anymore, what we're trying to do is throw a bunch of boron on the soil because we can do it relatively inexpensively and put a lot of pounds out there. And in our heavy soil with very little rainfall, we're really not too worried about leaching. I would expect we'll have that boron sticking around for 5 to 10 years, but we're going to find out. So, you know, we continue to run experiments on boron, but yes, we have been chronically short.
Yeah, it's been interesting watching some of the best farmers around the country and what they're doing in lighter soils. And they're literally putting some boron out pretty much every time they're going across the field. Put a little bit out, yep. A little bit out, a little bit out 3 or 4 times throughout the season. And wow, I'm glad we don't have that situation where we see it just leach away. But that certainly is a concern when we're talking about something like boron and the movement that it can have in the soil.
Yeah, definitely. The leachable nutrients, you've got nitrate, obviously, that everybody talks about, and then sulfate, quite a few people mention, but boron is one that not a lot of people think about. Yes, it's absolutely leachable.
All right. So the only way you're going to find this out on your farm, of course, is to be doing some soil sampling, but then coupling that with plant tissue testing. And the other common misnomer that we've got, Brian, is, well, boron's important in alfalfa, and evidently it's important in corn for us too. But that's taking for granted that you need boron in every other crop as well. So it's not just, when I'm growing corn, I need to worry about it, but I don't need to worry about it when I'm growing soybeans.
Yeah, you can just look at the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app and look at any crop that you raise, plug in your yield goal, and it's going to tell you how much boron you need. And well, boron doesn't leach nearly as fast as nitrate. It still leaches to some degree. And just ask yourself, I mean, yeah, you probably have a plan for N, P, and K, but what's your plan for micronutrients and boron?
Yeah, and I do want to stress this too. Boron's not the most important nutrient in your crop. Very likely there's something else going on. But nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, those are the ones your plants need the largest quantities of. And making sure you have plenty of those nutrients out there is really the first step in this fertility program after you get the pH right.
Right.
Then we start looking at secondary and micronutrients. But the thing about boron that gets everybody excited is that when you've got good levels of boron, you can be more efficient using your nitrogen, so you don't have to spend a whole bunch of extra money on N.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, anything else you wanted to say yet today, Brent?
I guess I'm just excited for when harvest gets here. You know, even with these satellite images, and we say, hey, the boron stuff is paid, the blended micronutrients paid a little bit more, it looks like. We don't know for sure. We're going to see how harvest turns out, and I'm hoping for record yield. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's that last month of the season here that really excited to see what's going to happen when harvest comes around. But we could use some rain in the meantime. We're getting kind of dry out there again. Not as bad as some areas of the country, of course, but need another rain to finish things out here for sure. We're going to be talking about boron on today's program. Also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. Or you can send us an email as well, radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Every season, you try to raise the bar to achieve your best corn yield ever. But disease can stand in the way, like gray leaf spot, northern corn leaf blight, anthracnose leaf blight, and southern rust. New Dilaro fungicide can stop them. Two different modes of action work on the diseases for the entire spray interval, delivering best-in-class dual mode of action residual efficacy for extended performance. It's the help you need for personal best yields. Keep raising the bar with Dilaro from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery, on-farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts, available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
No two seasons are the same, so you need your crops to rise ready for whatever's in store. Now, there's one simple decision that provides coverage on four fronts. The Acceleron portfolio offers protection against disease, insects, nematodes, and even moisture or nutrient stress. In the fight against the unpredictable, rise stronger with Acceleron seed treatment products. Learn more at AcceleronSAS.com/rise-ready. Performance may vary. It's important to use proper PPE when handling treated seed.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Our topic is a nutrient that we feel needs a lot more attention, boron. It's one that we're finding as we're seeing plant tissue tests from around the country coming in low to deficient on a majority of fields. We're also seeing soil test levels really low, And it didn't always used to be that way. And I assume part of that is pollution. But also some of it is just that we haven't been putting fertilizer back out in some cases. So I want to talk a little bit about that with Kurt Wolfolk with Mosaic. Kurt, thank you so much. Really glad to have you on.
No, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Why are our boron levels low today?
I think you brought up some good comments there. You know, in years past, we may have had some boron that came along for the ride in our fertilizer, but I think it's also important to remember that as we consider mobile nutrients, you know, boron is mobile in the soil. We have, you know, nitrate, sulfate, boron, and chloride are our four mobile nutrients, and there's a caution flag there that we have to remember that boron is mobile. When we go out and take a 6 or 8 inch soil test core, you know, we're getting a snapshot in time, and it's the extraction methods and stuff that we use in the lab, we don't have near the data set to pull from like we do with a lot of other nutrients. Whenever it comes to these mobile nutrients, it's just a lot harder to use a soil test to help correlate or calibrate back to a yield response. So while I fully fundamentally agree that we're definitely seeing a lot of regions where overall our aggregate data sets of boron are on the decline, you know, and that's been of a very keen interest to Mosaic, we also have to keep in mind the nutrient we're dealing with and the mobility it has in the soil. So,
yeah, it can be a little deceiving if it's sitting down at 8 inches and you pulled a 6-inch core, that's for sure. All right, let's talk about adding boron to fields. Now, in heavier soils, low rainfall environments like where we farm, we put quite a bit out in the spring and expect it's going to be there. But that's not the case for higher rainfall areas and lighter soils. What kind of strategies are you seeing guys utilize in those areas?
Yeah, that's another great call out. You hit the nail on the head. I mean, with the coarse textured soils, you know, we normally associate that to a low CEC, cation exchange capacity, on our soil test results. And organic matter, too. You know, organic matter can mineralize or provide us a lot of different nutrients, and boron's no exception. So, you know, those are your textbook situations of where we typically see the highest yield response to an addition of boron. But really, to your point, you know, I work in Western North America, and my farm personally, I have a little bit higher pH. I have some calcium carbonates in the soil and stuff like that. And we can hold up just a little bit of boron. We have a little bit of what we call adsorption, or the ability to hold that in our higher pH soils versus a more acidic environment. But, you know, one of the main strategies that we train and recommend retailers and growers today is, and we've spent a lot of time in research on this, is how do we slow the process down as boron moves through that soil profile? How can we provide the highest probability of having boron when the crop actually needs it? And the way we do that, you know, we've got somewhat of a new product. Well, it's been out 3 years now, but our Aspire Potash product has two forms of boron. We've spent a lot of time researching different types of boron in the world. There's three main types, and some of them dissolve or have what we call higher dissolution rates than others. And so we've really worked hard to figure out how to build in a fast and a slow release boron type within our Aspire product. And that gives you a more flexible application window. So if you have situations where you need to fall apply your potash rather than doing it all in the spring, obviously we all need to try to adhere to 4 R's, especially around waterways and water bodies and that type of thing. But, you know, we do need the ability to have that wider application window for some of these products and yet still have the nutrients we need it. And that was really important to Mosaic on why we built a product that had a slower release boron, so that we weren't, you know, like your example, you said it wasn't at eight inches when that rooting system needed it at 4 inches or 5 inches or so on and so forth. So the fast and the slow release is really key for us.
Now, there's a lot of different factors that are going to impact what's going on in your field. When we think about fields that are short on boron, it seems like we have a tough time getting adequate levels of other nutrients in. What role does boron play in the efficiency of some of these other nutrients?
Yeah, that's a great call out. You know, there's a lot of we look at nutrients and we talk about synergies or antagonisms. You know, one might kind of prevent the other one from being taken up, or might actually help another nutrient with taken up. And boron is a little bit more of an island unto itself compared to some of the other nutrients. With that said, we have found some really good correlations with increased potassium uptake. And if you look at a lot of your rooting systems that are deficient in boron versus situations that have adequate boron, not only do you get better root exploration, so to speak, but you also, you know, with better root exploration, obviously we have more ability to take up more water and more nutrients overall. But we've also found that there is a synergy or a linkage there with having adequate boron and being able to take more potassium up into the plant. And, you know, potassium and boron both are very instrumental in cell wall structures. And so when we think about lodging or any type of, whether it's rigidity or flexibility, you know, whenever you're thinking about harvest time and really needing a standing crop, I mean, potassium and boron are really at the front and center of that conversation. So, you know, 90%, 95% of boron is found in your primary and secondary cell walls. We know that quite well, research that was done in California, you know, many, many decades ago. The main second point to know about boron is it's found in high concentrations in those rapid growing points of the plant. So when we look at crop physiology, plant physiology, those rapid growing points are those areas of the plant, especially for reproductive structures, whether that's, we're talking corn, you know, maybe that's pollen tube elongation, you know, with soybean, we're looking at the flower, the pod set, all these things that we talk about with reproductive structures within the plant. Boron is very critical for those activities for the crop.
You know, I think that is important to know, and it's also a little bit tricky because I talk to growers all the time and say, well, I need the boron for reproduction, so I'll put it on later. But we really do need it all the way through the season, as you talked about how important that is in cell wall structures. So, you know, even for the guys with soils prone to leaching, kind of spoon feeding it along the way can be a real critical strategy.
No, absolutely. I mean, if you look at some of the more recent uptake curves that have been developed, I mean, University of Illinois is one that I'm most familiar with. You'll find that corn, you know, has a very steep uptake or need for boron. While it's small amounts, it is a micronutrient. We have to keep that in mind. But it has a pretty steep uptake curve, and then it kind of hits a flat spot, you know, there about VTR1, and then it goes back on a steep uptake of boron again. With soybean, we see much more of a linear uptake line for boron, so it's needed at a pretty consistent rate of uptake throughout that plant. And so many times, while, you know, depending on the region and belief in starter fertilizer or not, so many times we get a little bit myopic into this idea that we just need all these nutrients up front. Or like you said, maybe some growers just say, well, we need it out here at the reproductive period. And you made a very important call out. We need it throughout that growing season. And that's why that fast and slow release formulation was trying to hit both of those spots to really provide us, you know, that 50, 60, 70 day out when we may need it, not just the first 20, 30 days of that crop's life.
Yeah, a lot of nutrients to pay attention to, no doubt, but boron is a very important one. I've been talking with Kurt Wolfolk with Mosaic. Kurt, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and good luck here the rest of this growing season for your farm, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you very much.
Well, we're talking about boron, but we're also taking your calls and questions. If this brings up some thoughts you've got about your farm and what's happening with nutrients, that's great. If you've got just other questions about what's going on your farm, our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can also send us an email, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty, or Darren Hefty. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. In order to be the best farmer you can be, you've got to have a grain marketing plan. But what do you do when you're too busy out in the fields trying to maximize yield? Hi, I'm Darren Hefty. My brother Brian and I are always busy learning more about how to make our farm more successful. That's why we use Grain PhD to learn more about grain marketing and to work with our Grain PhD risk expert to create a complete grain marketing strategy. Visit grainphd.com to learn more about a free consultation for your operation.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery, on-farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
With DuPont Approach Prima Fungicide, there's a difference. A real difference you can actually see in the health of your crops and the health of your bottom line. From superior coverage to more reliable performance, Approach Prima delivers long-lasting results against hard-to-control diseases like frog eye leaf spot, while the preventive and curative action gives you the application flexibility you need for greater yield potential. So see the difference of Approach Prima for yourself. Visit approachprima.dupont.com to learn more. Always read and follow label directions.
Farmers, wouldn't you love to have one set of concaves for all crops? With Estes Performance Concaves, you can. That means no more backbreaking work, changing concaves, or downtime. Plus, Estes Concaves stop rotor loss with less grain damage and a cleaner sample. It's the best money you can spend on your combine. Call 765-650-4131 or visit EstesPerformanceConcaves.com and take back your bushels. That's 765-650-4131.
This is Dave Robbins reporting from what can only be described as a cornfield under attack. With me is Jim Stafford, a local corn grower. Jim, what's happening here?
Mites, banks, two-spotted and carmine, you name it. This corn is under attack.
What are the plans, if any, to deal with this serious situation?
Well, we're not going to stand for it. We're going to fight the mite.
How?
ZLSC Miticide. Just one application by ground or air gives long-lasting mite control. Now that field corn, popcorn, corn for seed, and corn grown for silage are all labeled, mites don't stand a chance.
But what about their eggs?
ZLSC affects mites in all stages, even eggs.
What kind of timetable are we talking about?
ZLSC reaches mites under the leaf where they feed and hide with translaminar activity. For long-lasting protection after a single application, apply ZLSC at early threshold or as a preventative treatment.
ZLSC. It lasts so mites can't. Contact your local Valent representative or Valent authorized retailer for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're talking about boron, and we get a lot of questions about nutrients throughout the season, and certainly N, P, and K are big ones and nutrients that we need in large quantities, but outside of that, this year, boron might be the one we've gotten the most questions about because there's a lot of farmers out there that are thinking, man, I'm nervous about it because I hear I can hurt my crop, but yet I'm seeing it show up low to deficient in a lot of my soil or plant tissue tests. So I'm looking for some answers. So that's why we thought we'd talk about boron a little bit on today's program. Really happy to have John Adams with us. He works with AgroLiquid up in Western Canada. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Can't complain.
You know, thinking about boron, it's one of those nutrients that I talk to farmers all the time. They're nervous about it. They know they need some, but they're really worried about overdoing it. How do you walk guys through that, you know what, this is something that you can do safely?
Right. Well, and I think a lot of the information maybe 25 years ago, there was a lot of fear about potential dangers of overapplying boron, and that came out of a lot of the light soils, those 5C soils or under 10 CEC soils. And as we move up in that CEC, I kind of have a 10% rule I usually look at on soil samples. 10% of your CEC, that would be the ideal place to let's rest around your ppms of boron. So as you move higher, the ability of that soil to provide boron, you need to have more ppms out there, but also it's a safer environment too for applying and building boron levels in soil.
All right, so if you had a 15 CEC, you're saying you take 10% of that, you'd be at a 1.5 parts per million of boron would be a relatively safe level?
Correct. That's kind of where that's why I target growers to shoot for in the soil. With an amending product like a boron product to build these soils up, and it's pretty hard to find ppms of boron, at least in my territory in Western Canada, at those levels. So it's a starting point.
You know, we got into a discussion a little bit earlier about soil pH. What about for farmers that have extreme pHs? They've got something in the mid eights, or they've got something down into the fives. How does that change the game for application with boron?
Totally. Well, yeah, as you move up in that, as that pH escalates or rises, your availability of boron is going to be inverse to that pH. It's going to be limited. And so, yeah, whenever you get out of that balance of that pH range, you're really going to struggle on micros for as a general statement, but it all depends where your pH ends up. But, yeah, if you're outside of that, your availability goes down dramatically too. So it comes back to managing your soil with where's your magnesium at, where's your calcium at, getting in line your pH, and then but it's a good way to speculate if you step on a farm and see, okay, your pH is at 8.2. Well, you're going to have severe boron deficiency out here. Where do we start?
Yeah, where do you start? And you think about the situation that you're in Western Canada, you know, compared to much of the United States here, you get a shorter growing season. So you've got to be really fussy and you got to be really effective with what you're doing. What's your favorite ways to get the boron out there? Do you like putting a little bit of boron in furrow? Do you have to go to a 2x2, or are you trying to do a lot of work foliar?
On the agri-liquid side of things, I mean, we're addressing plant needs in season and feeding that plant in season. So we're going in furrow. We're usually coming in again with a foliar application. But I drive growers to really focus on that soil too. Let's start a boron program. And that conversation, I say let's start because I would say there's less than 1% of, or maybe less than 5% of growers in Western Canada really focusing on or thinking about boron. It's not really on their radar. So it's really at the starting blocks on a lot of them. But we apply foliar, but and it's a good way to feed that crop in season. But at the same time, let's start without the deficiency in the plant. Let's build some soil levels up with a granular product to build that soil ppm up.
You know, when it comes to fertility, you said not a lot of guys concerned about boron. Should they be? I mean, are there a whole bunch of bigger problems that you're seeing that we got to get all these things fixed first, or is boron kind of the next thing on the list for some of these guys?
Right. It's different farm to farm, obviously, but boron definitely needs to be a part of the conversation. Boron and potassium, they play well together as far as they work in that plant together. They maintain the phloem structure within the plant. So if we're negative on, or if we've got some low levels of boron and maybe we're on the edge on our potassium levels in the tissue, that photosynthate produced in the plant leaves is not really making its way down to the root system to work on that biology in the ground and then to inversely get nutrients back up into the plant. So there's many important things. If you could have great potassium, but a low on boron, that phloem structure is going to not be performing at its peak. And we gotta keep that factory working hard all throughout the season. So it's definitely something to keep your eye on next time you get a soil sample done and know where you're at, and in conjunction with a complete program, make some appropriate decisions there to address it, because it's crucial to getting sugar movement going in that plant.
Yeah, I love that you brought up the phloem. So for those of you listening that say, okay, what are you guys talking about here? There's really two main systems moving water and nutrients in the plant. The phloem that John was referencing, moves up and down. So this is one that can bring things from the leaves, bring those sugars down into the root system and so forth. And then the xylem just moves up. So that phloem is so critical. And the comment you made there, I think, is great. If we don't have enough boron, we're going to have issues with that phloem structure, and all of a sudden it's going to limit our yield, even though this is a nutrient that we only need, what, a tenth of a pound or a couple tenths of a pound for normal yield goals?
Yeah, you don't need a lot, but I look at our yields in this part of the world, and it's not something we've really focused on for very many years, but yet we've been removing big yields and the exodus of more cattle operations. It's an issue, and it's about time we really start addressing it, just like these other nutrients. But there hasn't been a lot of you'd say influencers in the industry or government agencies talking about boron. So it's definitely important to plant physiology and making that plant work better. So
I was just talking to a grower today, and he said, What is your best or what is your favorite system for putting fertilizer on right around the seed or right in furrow? Do you have any favorites, John, that you've said, man, this system just works better for guys?
Well, a system that works better for getting everything, you're focusing on as we look at agronomy and providing the best environment for that plant, it's naturally liquid. Be it that you can add so many different things and right below that young plant. For boron specifically, I would look at, okay, how do we build soil levels? What are you doing in your planter program? And then how are you addressing the need through foliar? In excessively deficient areas of boron, you're going to need to probably hit all three of them. But for, stepping away and looking at nutrient-wise, and if your soil's not excessively deficient in any one thing, and we're just feeding it to move it along and getting good plant availability, that's where I'm looking at, an in-furrow, starting the season with something in-furrow right by that young plant, and so you're giving plant availability of nutrients right at that start when it's making its structure and just getting its life started there. So
yeah, for me, if I talk to farmers, I like to ask them, where can you put fertilizer on? If they say, I can't really do anything with my planter, I say, you have to get that on there. You're going to need it down the road, whether you're talking about some of the microbiological things that we're putting out there or certainly a rate of fertilizer to get that plant started off on the right foot. Been talking with John Adams with AgriLiquid. Thank you so much, John. Really appreciate having you on. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Nil. Nada. Nothing. That's how many documented cases of resistance you'll find with Mannsaid ProStick. You heard right. Nil. Nada. Nothing. Not all fungicides can say this, but Mannsaid ProStick from UPI can. This multi-site fungicide not only controls walnut blight, it plays a critical role in delaying the development of resistance, which is why Mannsaid ProStick is the foundation fungicide in all walnut blight control programs. For a recommendation, contact your PCA. Always read and follow label directions.
In 1949, Morton Buildings constructed our first machine storage building to establish our bond with the farming community. Since then, our relationship has grown, and so have our product offerings. From the smallest specialized operation to the largest agricultural enterprise, we understand the needs of your business and continue to evolve to meet industry demands. Plus, when you build a Morton building, you're backed by the strongest warranty in the business. To learn more about the Morton Advantage, visit us online at mortonbuildings.com.
Worried about weeds? Knock down tough species more efficiently and effectively with the Enlist Weed Control System. Enlist Duo Herbicide offers a convenient blend of new 2,4-D choline and glyphosate. For use in crops with the Enlist trait, Enlist Duo features the innovative Colex-D technology to provide near-zero volatility and minimized potential for physical drift. Farmers are discovering Enlist Duo stays where it's applied. And just as important, it wilts tough weeds quickly. Learn more at Enlist.com.
With Preaxor's Xemium brand fungicide in your soybeans, it's hard to know which comes first, disease control or plant health. Preaxor fungicide is proven to deliver both with consistent performance. So your soybean crops get plant health benefits like growth efficiency and stress tolerance, plus longer-lasting disease protection, all contributing to maximum yield potential. Grow smart with BASF and Preaxor fungicide. Talk to your retailer today. BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
We started utilizing the Dual React system this year. You can adjust your speed and it automatically adjusts your sprayer tips so you can slow down and you aren't building up huge droplets, or you can speed up and you're not throwing a mist that's drifting.
Hypro, helping you spray better.
Farmers value their independence. So does FMC. We understand the freedom to choose the best products for your fields is key to your operation's success. With the exclusive agronomic and economic incentives of the new FMC Freedom Pass program, you're free to choose your favorite seed and protect your crops all season long with proven FMC products. To learn more, visit fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass or contact your authorized retailer today. Always read and follow label directions.
Come on in. The Ag PhD mailbag is about to begin.
Thanks for listening to Ag PhD Radio today. We've reached the point in our show where we're heading to your questions via phone or email or Twitter. You can hook up with us online here at radio@agphd.com is our email, or on Twitter. You can find us Ag PhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty, or you can just give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD. Got an email here. This one is from Tom in Central South Dakota. He said, I've heard you talk about gall midge larvae and how you're seeing it in northeast Nebraska, western Iowa, and extreme southeastern South Dakota. I hate to tell you this, but we're starting to see some here in central South Dakota as well. Do you have any treatment methods that are currently working? Well, thanks for the question, Tom. We really appreciate that. No, not really. Not, especially not this time of year. Now, if you're not familiar with gall midge larvae, I think there was a recent article that Iowa State published about it. It's a growing issue in this kind of tri-state area right now, maybe into southwestern Minnesota, although I have not personally seen that yet or have seen it documented, but it would not surprise me since where we're finding it is just right across the border from Minnesota as well. But it's a new problem in soybeans, at least nobody has really seen it before, where we see a little midge or kind of almost like a little fly in May, we believe, piercing into small soybean stalks, laying eggs that hatch, and then those eggs become larvae or worms, and those worms work inside the soybean stem and start feeding on the soybean plant itself, ultimately killing the plant. I know, our research lead Glenn was just out in some plots here last night, and he said, man, we're seeing more of this gall midge. It appears to be spreading, so I'm not surprised to get the email from Tom that he's seeing the same thing. One of the things that has shown some impact on Dectus stem borer has been fipronil treatments in furrow. Now, fipronil is not labeled in soybeans currently, but it's the old product called Regent that BASF's got. We used to use this in corn back before we had BT corn, even in the 1990s. It was an effective corn rootworm product, but it was also good on first-generation European corn borer. So it's got some good systemic movement throughout the plant. We don't get that kind of movement out of the neonicotinoid seed treatments, even at the high rates. We haven't seen them really stopping gall midge larvae or stem borer. So that's something that we need some work on. What we've currently been doing, trying to treat areas that have been infected with gall midge larvae, we're trying to kill the adult midge. And when that fly is moving around, typically late April to the first half of May is what we believe, we're trying treatments with insecticides like bifenthrin through roadside ditches, end rows on fields, grass waterways. These are the places that we're seeing these midge coming from. But the larvae can overwinter in plants, so it could be last year's soybean fields that they came from. So if you've got soybeans out there this year, you may go right back into those areas where you're seeing these larvae feeding on plants and spray those areas with something like bifenthrin in the spring. That would be my best solution right now, Tom. We're certainly hoping as Iowa State and University of Nebraska and South Dakota State University are looking at this problem, that maybe we'll get something done where we get a special use exemption with fipronil treatments in the furrow, hopefully for soybeans, that could give us an insecticide option that would be out there for a while. Because the problem with the bifenthrin, while it is a fairly long-lasting pyrethroid, it's not super good on just bugs flying through the air days after you spray. So we've got to have those bugs land on areas where we had bifenthrin, and it's just tough to get that timing just right. I don't know that there is a just right timing. So we did see, I was just talking to a farmer today, farms kind of right along the Missouri River on the South Dakota-Nebraska border. He said he did see a trial that one of his neighbors had done that it looked pretty good. Areas that he's had a lot of problem where he's lost 30 or 40 bushel yield. This year, it looks like he may not lose much of anything. So they're pretty excited about that. And that was, I believe, just foliar applications of bifenthrin. So good luck. And for those of you who don't have this gall midge larvae issue in your soybeans, I would check that out because the problem appears to be spreading at least further north and west. We'll see how much it pushes south and east as well. All right, I got a question from Larry, and Larry's in Indiana. Larry said, I'm looking at my corn plants. I'm seeing the lower leaves starting to fire and burn up, and my agronomist said, it's not lack of moisture. What I've got is lack of nutrition. I'm not sure if I'm looking at nitrogen or potassium. My agronomist says I've got a little of both. How do I distinguish between the two, and what would be your plan going forward in some medium textured soils for building up levels of each of those nutrients? Hey, thanks a lot, Larry. Really appreciate that. Okay, so cornfields right now, you're right. We're seeing a lot of firing in certain areas of the country, and in some areas, there's no question we're short of moisture. But when you look at the variability throughout fields, you'll see different soil types showing up where, hey, where you got lighter soil, burned up a little quicker. But you'll also see in fields where there isn't a soil type change, some areas of the field burning up faster. And what happens oftentimes when we've got nutrition that plants are seeking, like you're running short in K, for example, what does the plant do? Well, it starts pulling in more water into the root system, trying to bring in the food that it needs. And as it's doing that, if it can't find the food, what's it going to do? Well, the plants will bring in more water. So your water use efficiency goes way down. And when we're short in one of those nutrients, those areas of the fields are going to quote unquote burn up a little bit faster. So as you're looking at those leaves, what I would look for, if you see that the yellowing on the leaves and the lower leaves of the plant starting at the tip and working its way up the midrib in a V-shaped pattern, well, then you're looking at nitrogen deficiency. If you're seeing the outside edges of the leaves turn yellow and flare up first, and it kind of moves its way in, so the midrib area stays green the longest, well, you're looking at potassium deficiency. And whichever one of those you're short, I would go and address that. Now, you mentioned your agronomist says you're short in each in different areas of the field, so yeah, variable rate application of potassium is going to be called for. So for me, I would look at grid soil sampling this fall, especially in those fields where you saw issues this year, and get potassium out there, whether it's going to be corn next year or soybeans next year or whatever. I don't care. We're just trying to fix that soil. What we target on our test, Larry, we've got a lot of our soils are in the 15 to 20 CEC range. We would call it a medium to maybe heavy soil texture. And you said you've got some medium soils there. I'm not sure what your medium is. Your level of medium might be, well, we've got a 25 CEC and that's medium in our area. Well, whatever the case may be, take a look at your base saturation. That's going to give you a ratio of some of those positively charged nutrients like potassium and calcium and magnesium that are big building blocks in your soil. We'd like that potassium-based saturation to be in the 4 to 8% range. On our farm, most of our soils now, we've built them up into the 4% range. Now we're trying to build them up to the 6% range, and it's just kind of stepping it up because clearly fertilizer costs money. And we're doing that over time. So I'm not sure where yours are at. We'd be happy to look at a soil test if you want to send one in to radio@agphd.com. We can help you out and figure out how much potassium, but definitely need to get some out there. Now, with the nitrogen, that's one that's mobile in the soil, like we were talking about with boron on today's program. So if you're short in nitrogen, we're going to have to look at that program a little bit to see, well, can we spoon feed some more later in the season? And maybe you did apply some late and just didn't get any rain to get it into the plant. That could be a problem too. So with the nitrogen, I wouldn't say, well, let's just put huge quantities out there and try and build things up long term. We're going to manage that on a year-by-year basis. Thanks for the question, Larry. We really appreciate that. We'll get back to more of your calls and questions after this short break. Again, if you've got a question for us, you can give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD or send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
They don't leave nicely. When worms and aphids attack your crop, fight back with Nudrin. Nudrin is a powerful insecticide that's applied after your crop has emerged. Its quick knockdown and almost immediate control stops worms and aphids in their tracks. Learn more about Nudrin and how to protect your crops from in-season invasions. Visit us at rotamnorthamerica.com. That's rotamnorthamerica.com.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Innovation is key to successful farming. Our innovative Thrive 3D application system saves you water, fuel, labor, and time. Get yours at no cost with FMC Freedom Pass. Simply commit to 3-year purchase minimums of Capture Thrive 3D insecticide and Anthemax herbicide to farm faster and with more freedom. Get more details at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass. Always read and follow label directions. Capture Thrive 3D insecticide is a restricted use pesticide. Anthemax herbicide and Capture Thrive 3D insecticide are not registered for sale or use in California.
If there's one thing farmers know, it's to expect the unexpected. And when the unexpected happens, you need to change plans right now. Not only does AgroLiquid have the crop nutrition products you need anytime, anywhere your crop would benefit from added nutrition, but we also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you determine the best use of your fertilizer dollar. Find your winning team at agroliquid.com.
Looking for an affordably priced fertilizer additive proven to boost yields in row crops? More than 1,000 third-party research trials concluded that Nutex EDA increases yield over 80% of the time. Nutex EDA is a micronutrient-based fertilizer additive that works by supporting the plant's enzyme processes to increase nutrient uptake of your applied NPK fertilizers. Try Nutex EDA this spring to maximize the return on investment of your fertilizer dollar.
Grow corn that pays you back for your investment. Headline Amp Fungicide from BASF is the smart choice. It consistently delivers plant health and disease control benefits like increased stress tolerance. You get more yield from an at-tassel application than any other fungicide, with best-in-class preventative and post-infection disease control. Grow smart with BASF and Headline Amp. Talk to your retailer today. BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time, taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can email us radio@agphd.com. I got an interesting one here. This one's from Matt in Minnesota, who farms down in Iowa. He said, I've been flying over the Midwest this week and noticed the haze from all the forest fires. I'm sending a picture that I took over Iowa at 30,000 feet, and the ceilings were reported as clear, but you can definitely see that smoke layer. My question is, do you anticipate a corn yield reduction from the reduced sunlight? Will this affect how the corn crop finishes? The views have been like this for the past week or so, and I remember some talk of reduced corn yields when we had widespread western wildfires back in the 1990s. Hey, Matt, thanks for the question and the observation. You're right. When we have those smoky years like that, it changes things. It certainly blocks sunlight. We need that sunlight. That's how we make energy in our plants. So it could certainly affect yields. It could certainly affect test weight and how our crops finish out. The other thing, too, is usually when we've got that haze up there, that's going to reduce temperatures just a little bit. I was talking to an agronomist just yesterday, actually, and in his area, he had a grower that put in a huge test plot. But in addition to planting the hybrids they'd normally plant in their area, they planted some later ones that were considerably later, like 10 days of maturity later than they normally would have. And they didn't get the plot planted early. So they got the plot planted kind of late. And he was asking, are we going to make it? Wow, it's going to be tough, especially like you say, with this smoke going on that's going to slow things down a little bit. That could certainly have a negative on yield. I look at it this way. It's either a positive or it's a negative. There generally aren't anything. There aren't too many things that are neutral. Like, it doesn't matter at all. Does it matter if it's a little bit warmer? Yep, that makes a difference. Does it matter if you have plentiful moisture or not? You bet it matters. Well, if this is the one factor that's different, we've got the smoky haze over us. I would say that's a negative factor. Now, how much negative? I don't know. I want to be positive, and I don't want to be too speculative here because I don't know if there's a scientific way to prove exactly what the impact will be, but I don't think it's helping us, that's for sure. So hopefully the fires clear up, first of all, but hopefully the smoke clears out soon, too. Appreciate the question, Matt. I got one from David in Minnesota, and David said, you mentioned in a couple of past Ag PhD shows about organic matter. You also talked about tillage being detrimental to organic matter because you're adding oxygen to the soil. How do you add organic matter without incorporating that organic matter into the soil? Okay, David, first of all, the difference here, organic matter in the soil and organic material are two different things. So let's just use a corn crop, for example. You harvest your corn, you leave all the stalks and husks and those kinds of things out in the field, and all you're really taking off the field is the grain. So all that material, organic material on top of the ground, I get it. That's kind of how I grew up too, thinking, well, we need to get that organic material down into the soil and that can become organic matter. But it really doesn't. It only, I think the studies have shown only like 1% of that actually becomes organic matter where it gets to that decayed or decaying state. What really becomes organic matter is undisturbed root systems. So corn, for example, it's got 5 times the root mass of soybeans. And when you think about how big a corn plant is above ground, it's almost that big below ground as well. And if we can leave that below ground portion of the plant undisturbed and let the soil microbes break that down over time, that's what actually becomes organic matter. So to build up organic matter, we want to reduce tillage. Now, we do a lot of strip tillage, and we're still seeing our organic matter levels rise slowly. One of the strategies that we've employed is if we raised corn this year on a 30-inch row spacing, we'll move over 15 inches to the side of that row and do our strip till there. That way we're breaking up tire tracks and that kind of thing, but we're leaving that root ball intact so it can decay naturally. So that's one way that we're using some tillage but still trying to build up our organic matter levels in the soil. When we do conventional tillage, in general, we see soil organic matter levels go down. Now, that's not always the case, but more than likely, from what I've seen in my experience, that's what I would say is going to happen. Hey, David, thank you so much. We really appreciate your question today, and thanks for watching our show. All right, got one from Rod down in Nebraska. And Rod says, I've got a lot of spots on my leaves. Some of it is gray leaf spot. Some of it is bacterial leaf streak. How do you tell the difference between the two and which came first? Hey, great point, Rod. Which did come first? I mean, it doesn't really matter at this point because you got both. But when we do see one disease come into fields, oftentimes that leaves an access point for a second disease to come in. And many times by the time we get towards harvest, we've got two or three different problems or even more out in the field. So the way to check this is just by regular scouting throughout the season. If you're out there, you know, once a week or something like that, you're going to see stuff just as it's getting going. And if you identify it early, you'll be able to see, well, what came in first. And if I could stop that, I may be less likely to have that second problem. So gray leaf spot, typically we're going to see that happening between the veins on the leaves with little rectangular blotches. With bacterial leaf streak, it looks very similar to gray leaf spot. And so many times I'll get emails from growers saying, oh, I think I have gray leaf spot out there. What should I treat with? And those kinds of things. But when you look closer at it, you'll see it's bacterial leaf streak. The way you can tell the difference, the big thing I'm looking for is the margin. So it still kind of looks like gray leaf spot, but you'll see it being really irregular on the margin. So instead of being a rectangle, it may have one side that looks straight, but the other side is going to be variable. And that's how bacterial leaf streak looks a little different. If you'd like to see some pictures on that, and it's hard to get it from my verbal explanation here, check out the Ag PhD Corn Diseases app. We put that together with the American Phytopathological Society. They got some great pictures, some great information about managing these problems. Now, the good thing for you, if you've got bacterial leaf streak compared to gray leaf spot, is at this point, we haven't really seen any documented cases of substantial yield loss with bacterial leaf streak. It's not a good thing to have, don't get me wrong, but we haven't seen that being a huge yield robber. Whereas gray leaf spot, that one can take a lot of yield away. So I would strongly recommend a fungicide program for gray leaf spot. We've seen some great results on our farm with fungicide use this year. Now, we don't have as much of a gray leaf spot issue as what you'd have in Nebraska, but it's been great. We look really good with that on our satellite maps and walking out in our fields. So maybe take a look at that. Talk to your agronomist about what timings may work best for you to keep gray leaf spot out. I think one of the things, too, is getting coverage down a little further in the plant, because oftentimes we're seeing gray leaf spot start low and kind of work its way up. If we can stop it before it has a chance to get up to the ear leaf, we can prevent a lot of that yield loss. Thanks for the question, Rod. We really appreciate that. All right, got one from North Dakota here. This is from Barry. And he said, I've got poor nodulation in my soybeans. I'm wondering what you think the cause may be. I did use an inoculant on my seed this spring. Okay, Barry, let's talk about inoculant real quick. First of all, to get the most out of your inoculant, that needs to be stored in a cool and dark place. So if it's hot and out in the sun, your survival is going to be less. The other thing is your bacterial survival goes down the longer it's been on the seed. So if you put it on the seed and didn't get the seed planted for a week or two, even though you may have an extender on there that's labeled for 30 or 45 days, you're going to see less bacteria. So that may be one thing. You may treat with your rhizobia bacteria closer to planting. The other thing, and I'm not sure what area in North Dakota you're from, I know there's been some pretty widespread drought across North Dakota over the last few years. That would be something. There are also some areas in North Dakota that had a little bit of flooding. Now, if you've got flooding or drought, those are very detrimental to soil microbes. So it may be that your soil microbes were either killed or any kind of carryover from previous soybean crops would be gone. Other things to take a look at as you pull some soil samples this fall, Barry, I would look at extreme pHs. If you've got a really high or a really low pH, you're going to have a tough time with rhizobia survival. Also on those soil tests, look at your boron levels. We were talking about boron on today's program. And then test for molybdenum and see if you have any out there. If you don't, that may be something that could help you too. And then, of course, the last thing would be crop rotation. If you've been away from soybeans for more than just a couple of years, that could be a factor as well. Thanks for all the questions today, and thanks to you for listening. And be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.